Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. Today, on Friday, we take a look back on 4 weeks of COVID coverage on the show. Executive producer Marisa DeMarco and I, we talk about the updates to the stories we've covered, we revisit interviews, and examine the impact to our lives and what we've learned in covering the pandemic. We're going to break it down for you. First up, Marisa has a news rundown of what we know today, Friday, April 17th, as of 5 p.m.
Globally, the coronavirus death toll has gone past 150,000. But because data collection about COVID-19 varies, and because there hasn't been enough testing, scientists still don't know how lethal the virus is, according to the Washington Post. In the United States, the fatality rate seems to be growing. In late March, it looked like 1.35% of cases proved fatal. On April 15th, it had jumped to 4%, and yesterday it hit 5%. The Post reports that doesn't mean the disease is getting deadlier. Those numbers might just be showing the gradual progression of the illness. Regardless, some states are easing up on restrictions, even though inadequate testing makes it hard to really identify or stop outbreaks, according to the New York Times. Those states include Texas, Minnesota, and Vermont. And less than a day after President Trump said it was all in governors' hands to decide when to reopen their states, he posted tweets encouraging protests of social distancing restrictions under the notion of liberation. In New Mexico, the state Supreme Court is going to continue to suspend jury trials in criminal and civil cases out through the end of May, according to a news release. 7 more people died in the state today from the virus. That's 51 so far, and there are 115 new cases, bringing the total to a little more than 1,700. If your child is a student in the Albuquerque Public Schools system, the district will help hook you up with internet service at your house through Comcast's Internet Essentials program, according to the Albuquerque Journal. And APS also has hotspots for people in rural areas. For Your New Mexico Government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
So the theme of this episode is updates and unpacking. We're going to talk about what we've been through covering this story thus far, but we're also giving updates on stories that we covered previously. On April 9th, we had an episode that was about ICE detention, migrants, and refugees. I had an interview with Nkazi Sanandale, who works with refugees and immigrant people from Africa. I was supposed to talk to her husband, but there was an eviction that her husband helped out with. Here's the clip. Now, as of this afternoon, your husband, Lungile, who works with you, is trying to help a family from Africa from being evicted. The state Supreme Court already put a halt to these. How and why is this still happening?
I think that some people maybe are not informed, or maybe they're just being impossible. And especially when they know that the families that we serve, most of them don't even speak English. And most of them don't even know the policies. And most of them, to tell you the truth, even though they may have a TV in their homes, they do not really like watch news. And so that means that they are really like cut out of whatever is happening, especially this time.
You know, they may not speak English. They may not watch the news or understand what the policies are, but I'm sure the owners of the property very well understood what the policies are.
It is horrible, and I want to believe that there's people who just, I know that with our African community, there are people who just don't like us, but they will take our money, we'll pay rent, they'll take the money, not that they really care about us. Let me put it that way. So that's one thing I would say, because I don't see how someone could do that knowing that they're not supposed to evict anyone at this time.
That's heavy stuff. We have an update on what has happened with the family. Marisa, what's gone down?
Yeah, so I reached out to Nkazi today, who actually just drove over to the family's home, and she got a little bit more information about what was going on there. So as we know, the state Supreme Court halted rent-based evictions. And so I guess what had happened is this family had a lease agreement. This is what Nkazi is telling me, that had ended, and they had asked the landlord for an extension. They'd offered money, but he was turning them down, and he had gone down to evict them. And Lungile, her husband, intervened to talk about how the Supreme Court had halted evictions. So they were expected to go to court that same week, but that case has been postponed until sometime in May. And so they're still living in that house for the time being. But Nkazi says both the husband and the wife have been without jobs you know, for a while now, as many people have during the pandemic. And a particular concern for refugees is that not everybody has access to filing for unemployment. Not everybody got a stimulus check, right? So without those kind of backup plans, if you don't have some kind of job, you don't have any money right now.
Generally, I feel powerless about something to do in this situation, and to know that this is not the only family who's going through something like this, particularly at this time, it hurts me.
Yeah, that was a story that just kind of developed in the normal course of our reporting. We were calling for maybe a more general conversation with Nkazi or Lungile. And as we were trying to do that interview, you know, something was unfolding for a refugee family that is being impacted right now. What's good about it, though, is that there are people like Lungile and Nkazi who intervened, who made it so that the family is still in their home for the time being until this gets sorted out in court. You know, there are people in our community who are working on these problems around the clock, I'm sure, right now. Yes, well, it's hard for you or I to intervene directly. Hopefully we're getting the word out about these organizations and the work that they do. Yeah, so Nkazi Sinandile is the director of the Immigrant and Refugee Resource Village in Albuquerque. And so that's one place that folks can turn for help. So at the end of March, we did an episode entirely about people who are in prison and who are in jail, and we got an interview with Jennifer Burrell from the Santa Fe Public Defender's Office, who had contracted COVID, who tried to get tested, who wasn't given a test, and who'd been in contact with many of her clients before she finally was tested and it was determined that she had COVID-19. So here's a clip from that episode.
So I called the Christa St. Vincent's hotline and they said, yes, absolutely, go get tested. So I went in Santa Fe and got tested. And Tuesday in the evening, I got my results that I was positive.
That's got to be very frustrating. You call the Department of Health and you get hung up on several times. And then they tell you, no, don't worry about to get tested. You call another organization, they test you immediately. And it turns out that you were positive. That's incredibly frustrating. How did that feel?
It's very frustrating. You know, I'm worried about my family. I have some at-risk people in my family. I'm worried about myself. I am immune compromised and suffer from 2 autoimmune disorders. But I'm mostly concerned about my clients. I have clients in jail with severe medical issues that more than likely wouldn't survive getting this. And so that's really what my biggest concern was the lack of ability to do anything to change it.
Have you heard from any of your clients?
Oh, absolutely. And they're terrified. Absolutely terrified.
That was on March 30th when we did that interview. As of April 1st, this is what happened. On April 1st, the New Mexico Department of Health revised testing criteria announced by Department of Health Cabinet Secretary Kathy Kunkel during a Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's news conference that afternoon. Thanks to increasing statewide testing capacity, they opened up the following to be considered for testing: COVID asymptomatic people who are close contacts or household members of New Mexico residents who have already tested positive for the coronavirus. That's one. Asymptomatic residents in nursing homes, asymptomatic people in congregant settings such as homeless shelters, group homes, detention centers. That's two. Symptomatic people who are displaying the COVID-19 symptoms of cough, fever, or shortness of breath. That's three. And all of this previous criteria consisted of those symptomatic or recently out of state or country with that travel history. So by them opening this up, it's providing more opportunity for more people to get tested. So we can really get a hold, one, of the numbers, and two, of people who potentially may be spreading it and not knowing. It's a huge impact in them opening up the criterion for testing.
Yeah, and I think it did result in a lot more tests, which gives us more information. It also, you know, doing more tests means that there's a boost in the numbers. Like when they start doing more tests, we might, and those results started coming back, we did see those numbers go up of the confirmed cases. But that's good, right? Like you want to know if you have COVID. We want people to be able to identify that they have it so that they can take the steps that are necessary to keep the people around them safe, right?
Yeah. Part of the confusion is the lack of testing. So The more testing we have, the more we can identify, like you said, who has it, and then we can best go about attacking it. So that is good news on that front. And those are the updates we have for you all as we unpack and go over these fast 4 weeks of COVID-19 coverage here at Your New Mexico Government. In the first episode of COVID coverage, we featured conversations that I had with my parents to see how they were adjusting to the social distancing guidelines. We decided to check in on our folks today. I called my mother. Marisa calls her dad. Here's how it went. Hey, call mommy.
Calling mommy. Mobile.
Hello.
Hello, Ia. How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm calling you to see how everything's going, how you're doing with the social distancing regulations, how you're doing with, you know, keeping the place clean and disinfected. How's everything?
Everything is going along pretty good. I'm doing what I should do in disinfecting, and I do go out, but when I come in, I wipe everything down, wash my hands, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like it's a bit of a drag to you.
Well, it is a bit. You know, you get a little claustrophobic in the house, but that's the best that we can do. We have to do it in order to stay safe.
Yeah. How's everybody in the building?
Everybody seems to be fine. They're keeping their distance, and they're obeying the rules of not gathering and that kind of thing, and everybody looks out for each other. Everybody calls each other to make sure that everybody's okay.
Well, I'm going to make sure that you stay safe and you stay healthy.
I will. And because of you and your sisters who check on me all the time, I don't have a choice.
That's right. Wonderful. Well, I love you very much. I got to get back to work.
Okay, darling. And thanks for calling.
You're welcome. How did your cauliflower mashed potatoes turn out?
It's just like mashed potatoes, or maybe even better. Yeah, I think you'd like it very much.
Okay. Lovely.
All right. I love you, baby.
I love you too, Mommy. Take care, okay?
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I called my dad, Mike DeMarco. Today's his birthday.
Happy birthday!
Thank you very much, John.
How old are you?
I'm 64.
64.
Yep.
Do you feel 64?
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
We're in the middle of this crazy time, and it's your birthday. Does it feel different than any other birthday that you've had?
Well, I guess the things I'm missing this year is, and I mean, usually I get together with family. We go to a restaurant or something, and that's kind of out. But, you know, I got to have phone conversations with everybody, which was what made my day.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about you guys. So you guys live out in Mountain Air, New Mexico, and kind of on the outskirts of Mountain Air, New Mexico. And there's a way that being so self-sufficient, like you guys are not on the power grid, you guys have a whole chicken egg farm. So you're kind of ready for this. You know, you're like, it's not hard to socially distance. You can't even see your neighbors, right?
The other thing that's a bit different for me is I'm accustomed to going to the coffee shop in the morning and hanging out with a few of my friends and having a cup of coffee and then coming back and go to work. Well, the going to work part is about the same as it always was. But, you know, I miss that time with that limited amount of time I did spend with my neighbors.
Yeah, well, and since you do live, you know, kind of so far away, what are some concerns that are a little different for you?
I think we view a lot of, generally out here, because we're so much more isolated to start with, we generally look at these kinds of problems as being big city problems. But it took a little bit longer, I think, for us to accept the idea that, yes, when we go to the grocery store or the post office, you got to wear a mask, you should be wearing gloves, you got to keep some distance, you know, well, you know, it's all things that we're adapting to.
You're super friendly to everybody you meet in public. You strike up conversations with strangers that can last an hour. Like, you're just very, I don't know, friendly, congenial, something like this. And you like a nice handshake. You are good at shaking hands and you shake everybody's hands. Does it feel weird not to shake hands?
That's a major, you know, especially in the beginning, you know, this idea that when a friend approaches the table, you get up and you shake his hand and you tip your hat. And it took too long for us to get that part figured out, that there's no shaking hands anymore. So now it's more like we make a joke about, you know, how we're going to tap our feet together, tap elbows, you know. But in a way, what it shows is that there is an adjustment being made and we're all rising to the occasion. So I'm glad about that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for this conversation and happy birthday again.
I love you very much, kid. Bye.
Now we're going to look at certain clips and certain experiences we had with guests that made us really think about this entire situation of COVID-19, how it's affecting each and every one of us in every facet of our lives. Episode 7 on the 31st of March, we did an episode on homelessness. And I got to talk with the executive director of the Mesilla Valley Community of Hope, Nicole Martinez. And we were talking not only about the steps that they're taking down in Las Cruces to protect people from COVID-19, but we talked about what can happen in the future. How can we continue to sustain progress? This is what she had to say. Do you think that this coalition will be able to stick together and move forward to make progress for the homeless population?
I do. I think in our circumstances, you know, having the New Mexico Coalition at Homelessness before the pandemic and after, you know, I think it's going to be one of those things like lessons learned and going forward, continuing a lot of these practices and these open conversations. You know, there are meetings every month with the coalition where we are able to weigh in and make contact with other homeless service providers. And here at the Mesilla Valley Community of Hope, we're in a really unique situation where we're set on a piece of city property, but we have four other agencies that are under the lease with us that also serve people who are indigent, disabled, and homeless. And we come together monthly and support each other and talk about what's working, what's not working, lessons learned, things to plan, et cetera. And so I absolutely have confidence that this is something that can be sustainable. I would love to see that in other areas and hope that this helps to bolster those relationships.
You know, I've been asking each guest about that because we're identifying the fundamental problems that we've been suffering under. And we're seeing people move into action. And we're seeing the success of groups like what's happening down in the Mesilla Valley Community of Hope. The reason why I ask them that is because I want to get an understanding of where people are thinking while we deal with the crisis, what people are thinking with an eye towards the future. How can we implement what we've learned now, what we're learning, and to cement something so we can have, you know, a more permanent change? This is something good that is coming. People who've been working together as a group and community. It's not just one individual organization trying the best they can to make things happen. They're coordinating with many different organizations, and that is really how it's going to branch out to make sure that no one is left ignored, that everybody's issues, everybody's problems can get addressed. It's going to take, you know, a collective effort. So it just gave me a lot of optimism and hope to hear that organizations have already started that practice in the midst of this.
Yeah, and there's a way. I think we're seeing that at every level right now. We're seeing a lot of coordination between groups that all work in similar fields or who maybe work with different populations. And, you know, now they're reaching out to one another to meet needs. So, and there's new organizations that are forming, kind of loose organizations of people who are just pitching in. We heard from, in one show, Albuquerque Mutual Aid Crew. It's cool to see that in this time, you know, when the chips are down, a lot of people who already know about these issues, who already understand them, you know, inside and out, are able to network with one another to provide services, to fill gaps in services that are left by state or federal government, to shore up each other and shore up communities.
On the 10th of this month, It was The Lost Arts. That was the title of the episode. We talked about what people are doing to be creative. We talked about how COVID-19 is affecting the creative community. I got on the phone with a an Albuquerque hip hop icon, Jod Speed One Chavez. We talked about what it's like. He's a gigging DJ. What it's like to lose those gigs. What should art be like in the future? But we also talked about, as creative people, what does it mean to go through this right now and to have this time on your hands? What kind of consciousness is going to arise from the art and the creative projects that people are delving into now?
Well, you know what? The one thing is, and it's with anything, I don't care what walk of life you come from, you never have enough time is what you're always saying. You know, oh, I wish I had time to do this. I wish I had time to add on to this. I didn't have time to do these remixes. So now the blessing in disguise is that we all been blessed with a lot of time right now.
Yeah.
And the creative juices, since you are in the house, I feel them like they're right. Like the vibe. I don't know if that makes sense for what we're going through, but the vibe is right inside the houses.
Yeah. I feel like it does make sense because I think the arts are going to be one medium which is going to help us not only get through this, but make sense of it, particularly the after effects. I'm talking about 4, 5, 10 years down the line, how people will be able to put this time into perspective as a marker in, hey, this is when a consciousness shift happened. Like, what do you think about that, Marisa? Not only are you a stellar reporter and executive producer of this amazing radio show / podcast, but you are a creative person as well. You're a musician. So what do you think about arts and creation and the change in consciousness now that people do have the time to be at home to work on their crafts? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, there's a way. I love listening to that clip because there's a way that what he's saying is like no excuses, right? Like... You meant to finish that mix? Well, why don't you finish that mix, right? Like, and so I do totally think that's true. I think, though, that we have to kind of get through this before we'll be able to see maybe fully the big picture of what it means for all of us before we're able to think about it in the huge way. But right now it is so important, I think, for everybody to document their own experience if they can, if they have the capacity for that, if they're not an essential worker, if they're not taking care of a bunch of kids, you know, if there is space to document what we're going through, because we're going to need the document afterward so that we can make those big changes that we need to make. And so whether you're a person who documents your experience in song or in story or in a diary or in making videos or, you know, making visual artworks, you know, however it is, all of that is going to be useful on the other side of this. I can't believe that it's been a month. I kept mistakenly thinking of this as week 3, just on accident. I mean, we've been doing the show for 4 weeks. We've been doing the show since the lockdown orders started. And, you know, there's a way that it has been forever and a way that it has been no time at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm just floating in this nebulous time-space continuum in between being on the phone and looking at a computer screen and with a microphone in my face. So, life is very interesting right now.
We did, earlier this week, we did an episode about different faith communities. You know, I don't attend church. I'm not a religious person personally, but I found so much value in what so many of these folks had to say on the air. And there's a particular clip that stands out for me from Archbishop John Wester in Santa Fe.
God can get to us, and God does get to us, and God will get to us. And when we have these problems like today in coronavirus, then God will figure out another way. And we need to be responsive to that and flexible and adaptable. Unfortunately, we human beings are not really good at change. We don't like change. And so that may be the grace of the moment, to pray to God for the ability to adapt and to do what's best for the common good.
He's so cool. He is so cool.
It plays into some themes that I've just been seeing over and over and over again, right? Like, I think I mentioned that I was in a gas station recently, the gas station was only supposed to have 4 people in it. All kinds of people were in there, like 15 people or something. The clerk kept trying to get everybody to observe the rule. People just weren't doing it. And, you know, while that was going down, a little bit I was thinking about what the Archbishop said, which is that, you know, we don't like change. We don't like even these small changes where you have to wait a little bit to go in the store. You have to wait. You have to wear a mask in public. We don't like it. We've not shown ourselves to be very adaptable, but it's just, it matters so much that we adapt in small and big ways to this moment and what it's asking of us, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the magnitude of this test that we're in. How will we adapt? How will we change? What type of changes will we make? I'm very optimistic about the future, but a lot has yet to be determined. We have to get through this and understand what are we going to do collectively to improve the life situation, the lives of everyone. And it's very, very vital. Now, you know, these are big picture ideas that we want to cast a lot of the hard work away for the future, which is incredibly practical because we're still in the midst of this pandemic. But every day it's wise to save a little bit of time to recognize what can be done differently. How can I operate differently? How can I operate with more compassion? How can I operate with more awareness? How can I operate with more diligence, with more energy, with more acceptance, not only for others, but particularly with oneself? So then that can reflect and radiate, and we can make these great changes that are required of us if we're going to survive.
And it all kind of loops back, right? Like we've been going 100 miles an hour, many of us working crazy hours, working around the clock, and there's not time to sit with yourself. There's not time to be gentle with yourself and maybe with other people, whether it's, you know, the people in your family, the people who are close to you, or even just people you interact with while you're walking around, right? Didn't feel like there was time. And, you know, we've lost sight of some of those things all the way from inside ourselves and then projecting outwards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Let's make use of this time. Let's make use of this time so we can all do better. And what we're gonna do with our time is continue to bring you stories that show you how COVID-19 and this pandemic and this experience that we're all sharing is affecting you. And occasionally we'll let you know how we're doing as well.
Yeah, and we always try to end our weeks with maybe something that's a little more reflective. This is our 20th episode, Khalil, since the pandemic began. It's number 20 already. So I thought it was a good time to look back at some of these things. We're going to keep reporting on these stories. We're going to keep talking about this stuff. So stay tuned in Monday. We're talking about companies and institutions that are trying to meet the need for ventilators, for masks in our community. So they've switched their modes of production and are full steam ahead trying to prepare.
Find a full list of the resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to donate or help online at bit.ly/ynmghub. Your New Mexico government is executive produced Like a Champion by Marisa DeMarco. It's produced by yours truly. News update by Marisa DeMarco. Many thanks to the team at KUNM. Big ups to Bryce Dix and Ty Bannerman for helping pulling clips today. Theme music is done by Pope Yes Yes Y'all. Hear us all week long on KUNM's airwaves at 7:30 p.m. Online, you find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the New Mexico Local News Fund, and KUNM listeners like you. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, I'm Khalil A. Colonna. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.